shares with Nishmas Safraya and Benner Abasha Anshel. So we left off last week talking about a very, very strange potential application of the Melacha Kotzer. Let's just try to recap for a moment. We read that very, very interesting Rashi last week in the Sefer Shabbos. Rashi was describing some kind of a flower pot with seeds that are planted inside. And Rashi was telling us how Erev Rosh Hashanah, they would wave it around the heads and throw it into the river, or get tashnik, a part, so rolled into one. So we're leaving out all the parts of that fascinating part for now. We want to focus a little bit more on the culture angle in terms of flower pots. So let's just review for a moment. We basically developed the idea last week that kotzer d'oraisa is pretty much linked to ground. When you pluck something out of the ground, something's growing in the ground, that's the ultimate halakha of kotzer. Whether or not there's a concept of kotzer on things that are not growing in the ground, that was very, very questionable. There was some rishon were of the opinion that you can have other kinds of dvarim b'gidulam, things that are growing in other kinds of settings that may also be kotzer, and other rishonim, such as the Ramban, said, I've never heard of such a thing. So we're going to be working now with the assumption that kotzer is very, very much ground-oriented, very, very much agriculture-oriented. The question becomes, how exactly do we define something as growing in the ground? So we already spoke about this a little bit back in Zoraya. When you have a flower pot, which has a hole in it, it's called an otzet tznokov. So an otzet tznokov halakhically is considered to be like the ground to such an extent that even constitutes coats on a level of deraisa. So the Mishnah says that if a person has something growing in a perforated flower pot, and you rip something out of it, you pull some seeds out of it, you pull a plant out of it or something, that can potentially be the equivalent of harvesting of kotzer on a level of deraisa. If it's only an otzitz she'eino nokov, if it's a flower pot without a hole in it, so then the worst it's going to be, says the Mishnah, is a prohibition with the Rabbanan. Now it's interesting that this distinction between otzitz nokov, otzitz she'eino nokov, appears in the Mishnah in Masechah Shabbos, so clearly its applications of Shabbos. The post can extend this to other areas of halacha as well. One of the areas that we mentioned passing a couple of weeks ago was vis-a-vis Shemitah. Halacha is also true that min ha-Torah, one is not permitted to plant in an otzitz nokov in the Shemitah. Yeah, see, an otzitz nokov in Eretz Yisrael. Cook such food, whatever you want. But if it's an otzitz she'eino nokov, it's a flower pot without a hole in it, so then although min ha-Torah, there wouldn't be a prohibition of planting it, it would still be problematic with the Rabbanan. We mentioned when we spoke about Zoraya, but that's part of a big, big cooler that exists in some circles in Eretz Yisrael. Certain kind of greenhouse planting that's done in what the halakha equivalents of otzitz she'eino nokov are. It's the Rabbanans and it's Sveikas and all kinds of different kunsim that are built on this distinction between otzitz nokov and otzitz she'eino nokov. But even though it's clear that if a person plucks something from the otzitz nokov, that would be a problem in HaTorah, what would that halakha be as follows? What would the din be, rather than plucking something from the otzitz nokov, what if one takes the entire otzitz nokov and moves it from one place to another? So let's say if I would have a flower pot sitting on the floor right now, so halakhically it's considered to be getting what's called yamik, it's quote unquote nourishing from the ground. So in the Torah, it's b'chub l'kaka. So I don't yank out something out of the flower pot, I take the entire flower pot and place it down on the table. What would the din be? So should we say that I was just tolish something in the karka? Because up until now it was quote unquote connected to the ground, and now it's no longer connected to the ground. Would that pose a problem or not? So I remember on that famous Shemitah trip that I took with the Bach from the Shiva. It's already going to be what year are we? I think we're in the fourth year of the Shemitah cycle, if I'm not mistaken. So this was not this past Shemitah, it was the year, it was two Shemitahs before this. It was already quite a long time ago. We took a trip, and one of the places that we went to, they were showing us some otzitz kind of stuff, and they were passing around a flower pot. And everybody could take a look and hold on to this flower pot. And I remember thinking to myself, wow, this is a fascinating way to violate Ruch Shemitah without even thinking about it. I said, the poskim say in Ruch Shemitah that you're not supposed to move flower pots from off the ground, onto the ground, from one person to another, because every time that the flower pot is, there's nothing interrupting between the flower pot and the ground, it's considered to be mechubal karka, it's not even touching the ground. When you hand it over to somebody else, so you put it down on the table or something, so you're potentially breaking the yanika, starting the yanika, coats of a shmita, zareb a shmita. This, I had to travel 6,000 miles to violate shmita in such a mishigastic way. So the days of my shaveda, nobody ever violated shmita. So I remember they're passing around the flower pot, and I turned to Rabbi Zevi Reichman, who was with me on the trip, and I said, I'm not sure what we're doing here. I said, we came to teach the boys how not to violate Shemitah. I said, why are we moving around flower pots? So we got all the hits. And then they explained to us that there was no dirt in these flower pots. It was all water, it was all hydroponics, it was a whole different cheshbin, it was a whole land of Megillah, it was mutlach etchila, the rabbis from America didn't know what they were talking about, you got the farmers were screaming at us, it was one of those moments in time. Anyway, getting back to the story. So back to the Masechta Shabbos, if a person wants to pick up a flower pot and move it, so is that tantamount to kotzer or not? So the Gemara is a very, very strong statement about this. The Gemara says if a person picks up, that was the parpisa, that flower pot with the seeds, Erev Hashanah, shaking around your head. The Gemara says, if you move that flower pot on Shabbos and you pick it up off the ground and put it on the table, you're chayev. Chayev. Chayev sounds like a really, really harsh term. Chayev always sounds deraisa. Almost always sounds deraisa. So on the spot, both Rashi and Tosafot said, ah, come on, I can't mean it. It's impossible. How could you say that that's called kotzer in the Torah? I'll bring you a raya. So the raya that the Rishonim are about to bring, the raya itself, this is never going to happen, hopefully. It's never going to happen for any of us. But the halakhic principle behind this raya is something that is very, very relevant. We invoke this all the time, and particularly in Uchel Shabbos. So, well, you know, hang in there. Some people may give like a funny face about the raya itself, but hang in there, because it's going to become important for us the raya. So Rashi and Tosfos trying to bring a proof that the Gemara never really meant it can't be chayav, because the Gemara in the 8th paragraph of Masechta Shabbos talks about the following shaila. You know, we live in a world which is a little bit more advanced, some of the physical comforts of than years gone by, and one of the things that we have Rav Hashem used to is that a person goes to the bathroom. Our bathroom system is very, very, very different from the bathroom system back in the days of Chazal, back in the days of 100 years ago. So everything is different, completely different kind of a setup. We have running water, they don't have running water, they have outhouses, etc. Another thing, convenience that we have, a person goes to the bathroom and physically needs some way to clean themselves. So we have toilet paper, we have tissues, these person didn't exist. They didn't exist in the ancient world. How did a person clean themselves and go to the bathroom? So whatever rag, whatever shmat, whatever something was available would be used. Very often a person would go to the bathroom out in the fields. And that was the way most of the bathrooms were, out in the outhouses, out in the boonies somewhere. So what would a person use to clean himself? So the Gemara said, we're just described with the practice in the ancient world, whatever was there, whatever was available, there was a leaf available, there was a rock available, there was a piece of wood available, whatever was available, that's what a person would use to clean himself and go into the bathroom. So the Gemara discusses in Masechta Shabbos, what can a person use if a person is going to the bathroom on Shabbos? Because many of the things that were usually used were muktzah. A person can use a rock, can use a piece of wood, can use a leaf, can use that. Many of those things were considered to be muktzah. So the Gemara tells us the following very, very important principles. The Gemara tells us that we have a rule called Gadol Kavod HaBrios, Shedocha Certain Yisurim in the Torah. That in order to maintain Kavod HaBrios, in order for a person just to have just basic respect, a person shouldn't be embarrassed, shouldn't be something that's embarrassing to people and to him and the people around him. So Chazal permitted us to violate Yisurim the Rabbanan. Whatever is considered to be only an Issa the Rabbanan, so we apply the rule Gadol Kavod HaBrios. So rather than embarrass a person, either oneself or embarrass others, one is allowed to violate Yisurim the Rabbanan. Therefore the Gemara tells us that any kind of tiltul mutzah is permissible in order to clean oneself and go to the bathroom. Otherwise, the person's going to be dirty, it's going to be a big zayon. So therefore, you can move the rocks, and you can move the woods, and you can move the leaves. So whatever is necessary to clean oneself appropriately is permissible on Shabbos, because Gadol Kavod HaBrios, that's Dochi Surum Derabon. However, what one is not allowed to do is, one is not allowed to violate a Nisa Deraisa. For Nisa Deraisa, then tough. For Nisa Deraisa, it's Nebuchadnezzar. So stay in the house, stay out of the field. There's no way in the world we can permit Chil Shabbos Deraisa, anything short of Pikuach Nefesh Mamish. So that's the klal of the Gemara. So in the middle of that discussion, the Gemara talks about using certain things, about picking up certain things, clumps of dirt, things that are growing in the dirt, moving them around from one place to another, which seem to be, and again, we'll leave you out some of the details, seem to be the halakhic equivalent of the moving of some of these kinds of flower pots. And the Gemara says it's okay. The Gemara says that for the purpose of going to the bathroom, it would be permitted to move these kinds of items. So come Rashi and Tosfos on the spot and say, what do you see from here? You see from here that the moving of these kinds of items cannot possibly be a deraisa. If it would have been a deraisa, then we would never have permitted it. So again, most of us are not going to have we're never going to have the shalas, we're not moving our flower pots, we're not going out in the outhouses or something. But it's interesting because just parenthetically, this principle is something that we do rely on very often. This idea that for the purpose of going to the bathroom and cleaning a property after the bathroom, one is permitted to violate things that are otherwise certainly assumed they're abundant. Let's say Lamashal, very, very real Shaila, nothing to do with the Malach of Keitzer right now, has to do with other Malachas of Kareya. The person finds themselves in a bathroom, and there's no tissue, there are no Shabbos toilet paper, there's nothing available. Now what is the person supposed to do? So it depends what the answer to that question is. It depends, is cutting toilet paper nisa deraisa, or is cutting toilet paper nisa derabanan? If it would be a nisa deraisa, then the person wouldn't sound very pleasant. Have to sit in the bathroom for the rest of the Shabbos. There's no way you can violate a nisa deraisa at any cost short of pikuach nefesh mamish. However, if cutting toilet paper in Shabbos is only prohibited mid derabanan, then we would have a right to plug in this gemara. The same way Chazal permitted to move muktza to prevent to enhance kavod abriyos, to prevent the bizayon, so to a person would be permitted to cut the toilet paper if it would only be derabanan. So, what's the answer to that question? This is not a kosher shabbat. I'm dropping the gun about 20 malachas. Is this a malach of the rice or a malach of the derabanan? So, a great surprise to come to everybody. Let's hear it all. It's a machlokes. It's a shabbat. It's a machlokes. Whether cutting toilet paper is deraisa or not depends on some details of Malachus Kereya. It's not Abanas Litzvor, it's Abanas Lissach, a very, very complicated Shah Malachus Kereya. But with all the dust settled, it's Machlech Yisimshon. So what do you do? So come to Poskim and recommend, what you should do is, if a person finds themselves in this very, very uncomfortable position, what you should do is as follows, that one can easily turn a deraisa into a derabanan. It's called Kiliachiyad. It's called doing things in an abnormal fashion. So somebody should try to figure out some kind of creative way to cut the toilet paper. I'm not going to get into the gory details of that. Do that, and I'll leave it to your own imagination. But if a person finds themselves in such a situation, whether it's stepping on the paper, moving their teeth, or whatever, you figure out how to eat, how to do it. So that would be permissible based on this gemara. So again, even though the particulars of the otzitz nakov are probably not going to be that common for most of us, especially in that kind of a setting, but the principle behind it is very, very much relevant, even bisman hazeh. We have some more common applications of this principle. Going to the bathroom, making sure everything is clean as you're going to the bathroom, is clearly a violation of covenant brios, and therefore one is permitted to violate what is only a nisa derabanan. This is part of the shayla about plunging toilets on Shabbos also. Also jumping in on the malacha bonim, batish. There's a big machlekes in poskim as to plunge a toilet. Is that considered to be a malacha derais, or is that only a nisa min derabanan? Maybe it's mutl gamrit. So again, the same kind of a shayla. So the best way to do that, l'fini is night, it's better. If you have 10 bathrooms and you don't need that bathroom, so you just close up the bathroom for Shabbos. But if you have 20 people in the house and there's only one bathroom and that bathroom's no longer functioning, that's going to be a very, very quick covenant of breeze issue. So therefore, one is permitted to plunge the toilet. According to some, you could do it literally in a normal way. If it's only the rabbana, would be permissible. According to those who hold that it's a deraisa, so one would have to do a kiliachayad. I will not even begin to demonstrate that. Although I will tell you, after the shiur's over, if anyone really wants to know, I will not give a physical demonstration, but I will describe to you about how I have done that in the past. There is a way to do it, believe it or not, and it does work. Okay? But, I'll break the action for 1 second, okay? Because the truth, they say America runs on Dunkin's. They say everything runs on. Okay, so one quick last application of this principle, we're going to move back to the kotzer. So this is a very, very common shayla. It's actually combined some of the things we spoke about in the past weeks. Sometimes a person finds themselves at a place, at an event on Shabbos, and they go to the bathroom and they realize that the only way to flush the toilet is going to flush by itself. There's going to be some kind of a motion detector to flush the toilet. So now what are they supposed to do? So, Chora, the same answer. If what's involved is a malach of your eyes, so you can't do anything. If the mum should stay in the bathroom, you can't do anything. But if it's only an Issa D'Rabbanan, then one can argue that Kavod HaBriah, person has to go to the bathroom, so the person has to go to the bathroom is the obviously a violation of Kavod HaBriah. So if the Issa involved is only a D'Rabbanan, that would be permissible for Kavod HaBriah. So based on some of the things that we spoke about in the past, it's gracious, is lo nicholeis, lights, these lights are D'Rabbanan, nicholeis, sense, and all that kind of kudzim. So I would say as follows, that l'chadchila, one should try to avoid this, namely if one finds themselves in such a place and there's another bathroom available without these kind of things, one should for sure go to a regular bathroom. If push comes to shove and there is no other place to go and a person has to go to the bathroom, so then they're allowed to go to these kinds of places, and then whatever it is, they walk out, and that's it. Whatever happens, happens, it's not their problem. It's God will cover the breeze. But that's sometimes the Shabbatons that have called me frantically on Friday afternoons that they have 300 kids in a hotel, and all of a sudden they come to the realization that all the public bathrooms or whatever it is, all the public bathrooms are all, you know, we had to figure out different kunts and how to deal with that. If I'm not mistaken, I think one time they told me that if they rent out another two or three rooms or something on the first floor, so then those bathrooms were not automated. Everyone else was like on the 20th floor, so the question is, are they mechuyev to spend another $500 to avoid everybody, avoid 500 kids having to use these automated bathrooms? And I got a very tricky. Whenever we get halachic / mom in the shayla, so I always get very, very nervous. So we'll leave that out for the public forum with the psachim that was. It wasn't as expensive as some of the other psachim that we spoke about in the past. Okay, not for now. Get back to the story. Okay, so let's go back to malacha of kaitzeh proper. So the Gemara tells us in the beginning of Maseches Beitza that there was a prohibition in the Rabbanan that was instituted to prevent kotzer. So up to now we've talked about kotzer deraisa. We're now going to move into different gezeiros, different decrees that were made to prevent the person from violating kotzer. So one of the assumed Rabbanan that was made is what's called Peres HaNoshrin. The Gemara tells us that Beis and Maseches Gimel and Maseches Beitza that if a person is walking past their apple tree on the Shabbos morning and they notice, oh, some of the apples fell down. And they know these apples are on the tree on Friday night. They must have fallen down on Shabbos. Great, I'm going to have a wonderful, delicious apple. So that's a problem with the Rabbanan, and you're not allowed to eat that apple because that's called Peres HaNoshrin, fruit that fell off on Shabbos. And the reason why Peres HaNoshrin is prohibited is Gezeira Shemiyahu Yitlosh, that we are afraid that if you eat the apple tastes yummy, and you're going to want another apple, and you're just going to climb up and go grab off another apple, which of course would be Kotzer Derei. So to avoid that problem of Kotzer, Chazal made an institution called It's a very, very strange place where this gezeira appears in Shas. It appears in a place you would have least expected it. It appears at the very beginning of Maseches Beitzah. So the first Mishnah Beitzah starts out with Beitzah Shnol de Yontif, an egg that was laid on Yontif. One is not allowed to eat it on Yontif. And the Gemara is not sure why that's true. So the Gemara has four different interpretations why there's a problem of a Beitzah Shnol de Yontif. So one of the reasons is because it looks a little bit like Peres HaNoshrin. But just as an apple falls off a tree, so too an egg falls out of the hen. So it kind of looks all the same thing. Even though the reason of Shema Yitzor obviously doesn't make any sense when it comes to eggs and hens, but I'm afraid the guy's going to stick his hand inside and pull out the egg, so the whole reason doesn't apply. But the Gemara says, what's called a Chadig Zeira? It's all part of the general Gezeira of Peres HaNoshrin. So the bottom line is, there is a prohibition of eating fruit that fell off the tree on its own. Baby Shabbos Ben Yantav, that's explicit in the Gemara. And again, the reason is, Gezeira Shemiyah Yitzor, Gezeira Shemiyah Yitzor, we're afraid that a person may come and harvest by mistake. You may forget that it chops and you have to go ahead and pluck a fruit. I remember I was once looting the sugya of Peres HaNoshrin, and for some reason, I don't remember why, I looked up the Shabbos which was Be'er Moshe, I had never seen a Rav. I opened up the sefer for something, and I had in my mind Peres HaNoshrin. All of a sudden, I saw it said on the bottom, it said in one of the tshuvas, Peres HaNoshrin Halacha. I said, wow, this is so excited. I said, he has a whole sermon about what can he pass around Peres HaNoshrin. So I started to read it, and it was some tshuva about the Matri Naguna or something. So there must be some mistake on the title of the tshuva. So I fiddled around, looked at a table of Catholics, I looked at something else, and I said, Peres HaNoshrin, oh, this must be the right tshuva. There was some tshuva, the Shalom Dinei Mamonos, so I said, what's wrong with the index here? And then I noticed at the end of every single tshuva the Be'er Moshe has, Peros HaNoshrin Halacha. That means, it was a phrase, it means the fruit Lahalacha. That means, these are the final words, this is the summary of the tshuva. You have to know which terms you use. It's almost as bad as, I remember when I was learning Masech HaZvachim, so I think Rav Shapiro appreciated it about the library, so I went up to the library, fifth floor, And I was fiddling around in some of like the Torah journals, for looking around for something, and I saw that there was a journal that was called the Bama, Beis Mem Hei. And I thought, wow, I said, some Kachim Kol or someone must have put out all kind of stuff on Bamas, and we learned the end of Zvachim. He said, there's nobody in the world who writes about Bamas. I said, I picked it up and said, what's up with Bamas? I'm looking at this one. There were 40 editions. Bama means the theater, means the stage. It was a lesson of Torah journals about the Israeli stage, Israeli theater. Okay, so you gotta always make sure you know what you're looking for. Getting back to the story. So this Gezeirah Peres Anosha and the Rishonim were very bothered with, because it seems to be a superfluous Gezeirah. The Gemara itself, in Maseches Beitzah, tells us that if a non-Jew comes to you on Yom Tov, on Shabbos, and brings you some vegetables, brings you some fruit, something that was connected to the ground before Shabbos and Yom Tov began, so one is not allowed to partake of it. You're not allowed to eat that fruit. Why are you not allowed to eat that fruit? Because it's considered to be muktzah. Since when Shabbos and Yom Tov started, it was clearly off your radar screen, it was clearly off limits. So now, even though right now it's on limits, right now it's detached from the ground, but whatever was muktzah when Shabbos and Yom Tov began, because this ketzel ben hashmash, so once it was muktzah when Shabbos and Yom Tov started, it remains muktzah for the duration of the day. So the Gemara says explicitly that anything that was mechubal l'karka, anything that was connected to the ground, is automatically also to be eaten on Shabbos and Yom Tov because of the problem of muktzah. So Tosfos in the beginning of Maseches Beitzah is bothered with the question, said, why do Chazal have to make a brand new gezeira called Peres Anoshrim? You have to make a new iser called not eating fruit. We're afraid you're going to climb up and pluck the fruit. It should have been usher anyway. It should have been covered anyway. Why isn't it usher because of muktzah? That's the shaila. What do we gain? Why the necessity for this additional localized gezeira to kotzer? What happened to muktzah? So the Rishonim addressed this in terms of a fundamental issue, talking about muktzah per se. Again, we'll leave kotzer now for a second, just understand a little bit about muktzah. There is a machlekes between Rabbi Yehuda and Rabbi Shimon, a fundamental question about the parameters of muktzah. Now, when we think of muktzah, we usually think of arakas muktzah, money muktzah. Those are the things that we think of muktzah. But the original category of muktzah literally means something that a person is not really thinking about. A person is kind of off his radar screen for Shabbos and Yom Tov. So the mashal, but if a person has a storehouse, they have a lot of grain, Yosef, Pashas of Miketz, so they have a lot of grain, and they're not planning on eating that grain over the course of today. They're not planning on using it. It's stored away for a later date. They have food that's edible now. They have boxes of matzahs. It's sitting in the basement. They'll say, put it away for Pesach food. Nobody's planning on eating it now. The month before Pesach, no one's going to plan on eating it now. And now all of a sudden comes the afternoon, on Shabbos afternoon, they realize they need Lechem Mishnah. They want to go grab some of the matzahs. They want to go grab some of the grain. They want to go grab some of the fruit. Stuff that's been stored away that they weren't planning on eating. Are you allowed to do that on Shabbos, on Yom Tov now? So that was the machlekes satanoim, whether yesh muktzah or ein muktzah. Namely, that kind of food that you weren't really thinking about beforehand, is that a problem of tiltal on Shabbos and Yom Tov? That was the machlekes satanoim. So we happen to paskin that form of muktzah happens to be mutter. We hold that just because you put food aside for next month, that in of itself does not disqualify the food from being used on Shabbos and Yom Tov. So that's the machlekes satanoim, but we paskin the kula on that Shabbos. There are many other kinds of muktzah that we do accept. The term muktzah appears in Shas, and it means 25 different things in different places. But that particular type of muktzah, food that was just off your radar screen, so that we have at the paskin is mutter. So that's what some of the Rishonim say, that's the reason why Chazal had to come up with a new issa called Gezeirah Shem Yalav Yitlosh, because the Gemara in Beitzah that speaks about not using Dvarim HaMuchavarim in HaKarka, maybe for us would be mutter. Maybe that wouldn't be a problem. So many Rishonim have a lot of issues with that. And again, we're not going to learn the details of Luchos Mukta right now. That's a very, very, very shaky argument. Not so simple at all. So bottom line is, we're not 100% sure why Chazal had to aser Peres Anoshrim for independent reasons, but what I said they did. There's an Isser, potential Isser of Mukta, that's probably on the radar screen also as a potential problem. And in addition, there's a prohibition called Peres Anoshrim, Gezeirah Shem Yalav Yitlosh. So there is a big machlekes Rishonim that can potentially have very, very real shadows lemaisa for us. Just how far this gezeira of Peres Anoshrim goes. How afraid are we that I'm not allowed to eat the fruit that fell off, gezeira that I may come to do the melach itself? So there is a sugya that appears later on in Maseches Shabbos, the end of the 16th parak, about a non-Jew who does a melacha for a Jew. What is the din? So the general rule is, if a non-Jew, I'm not allowed to ask a non-Jew to do a malacha, but he does it on his own. So if he does it with Tzorach HaYisrael, I'm not allowed to benefit from that malacha on Shabbos. If he does it l'tzorech atzmo, then generally speaking, I am permitted to benefit from that loan. It's a very, very common shaila. Non-Jew turns on the light for you. You're not allowed to stay in that room. You have to leave that room on Shabbos. The non-Jew turns on the light for himself, and then he leaves. Then you're allowed to stay in that room. We almost had the shaila yesterday. Those who I don't know who was with me. Someone was with me yesterday, right after Minchas, and my throat's been a little bit on the blink the last couple of days. So I ran to get hot water. So I went to get the water out of the urn, and it was what we call in halacha tipen. There was those last drops coming out. It was a big Shabbos, a lot of people here. So I guess a lot of the water was used. It was maybe enough for half a cup of hot water. So as that was happening, so I was thinking back to a story that happened back in Rosh HaKola many moons ago, where I guess they also had a sore throat then. And I remember I was trying to kick some water from the urn Shabbos morning, and there was very, very little water left. And then lo and behold, I went back later in the afternoon to take water from the urn. It was Kiyat HaMelech, it was full. So it didn't take that much chachma to realize that somebody had added water to the urn. Hopefully it was the non-Jew who had added water to the urn. But the problem was he was doing it for us. He clearly saw there wasn't enough water, so he was trying to do us a favor. So he added water to the urn. The problem was that us had all the water now. Now you could use any of the water. And not only could you not use it on Shabbos, you had to wait till after Shabbos is over. But there was called Chtei Shiyasu. So you have to wait enough time that you could heat up water. So if you have a whole urn of water, it could take you some time. So that was the bad news. The good news, those who've been in Rosh HaKola know, by the time they dive in Meir, when it's a Shabbos, it's already Tuesday, it's already B'chdei Shiyasu, so they're still waiting for Meir for the left and the end of the summer. They still haven't finished Tabbalah yet. So last night, as I was trying to get those drafts on water, I was thinking about that. The Baruch Hashem, at least nobody, no goyim filled up the water. So the Mishnah says the favorish that if a goy does a malacha for himself, that's okay. If a goy does a malacha for you, that's going to be a problem. So the Mishnah tells a story about how once some of the Tanoim were somewhere, they had to walk over this thing of water or something, they couldn't get over the water, and there was a guy there who built a plank, he built a ramp for himself, because he also wanted to get some wood, and he banged a couple things, he made a makeshift plank, and after he walked over it, so then Rabbi Gamliel walked over it himself as well. The Gemara explains, why could Rabbi Gamliel do that kavalt? He's benefiting from Allah and Shabbos. And the Gemara says, no, the guy obviously built it for himself, and once it was there, so it was mutter from Gamliel to use it. So come to Rishon and ask Akasha, wait a second, it should be usur to use this plank, to use the wood, to use the water, to use the thing that the guy did for himself. Why? We should call this, catch this, Peiros HaNoshrin. It's the same gezeirah. What was the gezeirah Peiros HaNoshrin? We're afraid that if we let you use the apple that fell by itself, the next thing you know is you're going to go and pluck the apple. You're going to go and do Peiros HaNoshrin. So how could we ever let you use the item that the guy is doing? Gezeirah, you're going to do it yourself. So we should ask it for a different reason. Not because of Amir Yaakov, it should be a new Gezeirah, the old Gezeirah, it should be part of the Gezeirah, the original Gezeirah of Gezeirah Otu, you're going to do the Malacha yourself. So the whole institution of having Goyim doing things for themselves, and then we're piggybacking on them, and that should always be usur because of this problem of Peiros HaNoshrin. So what's the answer to that question? So we'll see hopefully this from next week. There are two major, major different approaches to this problem in the Rishonim. The Nafka Mina is going to be, believe it or not, cups of coffee. Not cups of coffee on Sunday morning in shul, but cups of coffee in hotels on Shabbos morning. There's a very, very common shaila. A person finds themselves in a goyish hotel on Shabbos morning, and there's coffee there. The coffee was clearly made on Shabbos. It was clearly made by the goyim. It was clearly made for all the guests. So unless it's Rov Yisrael, it was made most probably for the goyim also. And the question is, can I drink that coffee or not? Is that a problem? Believe it or not, a Peiros HaNoshrin. So hopefully, hang in there for next week. Hopefully, for next week we'll try to figure things out. Thank you.